Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, June 4th, 2011. This is episode 775. Enjoy. Good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it is the first Tech Guy show of June 2011, episode 775. A continuing kind of series over the last 7 years, trying to figure out what the heck is going on in the world of tech. What the heck is going on in the world of tech? Now, if you've got a question or something you'd like to ask about or talk about, I'd love to hear from you. You could just call us. You know, the phone number is, it's easy to remember. We have a special, easy to remember, mnemonic phone number. Not demonic, mnemonic phone number. 8888-ASK-LEO. See how easy that is to remember? Like the just 88 keys on a piano, right? So just imagine a piano and then another piano and then ask Leo. 88. See? Now it's burned in your mind. They do say, you know, I think one of the reasons that there are 10 numbers, area code plus 7, in our phone number is that research shows that the most numbers we can easily recall at a time is 10. That's not that easy, is it? Try to remember your phone number. Or when you're taking an answering machine message. Okay, remember this. 888-827-5536. Remember that? No, but they do say that 10 numbers are some sort of magic. There are magic numbers in the human mind. 10 numbers is the most we can easily hold in our head. That's why it's 10 numbers for the phone system. That and the fact that with 10 digits, you can reasonably get a phone number for every person in the country. And even more so, right? What is 10 digits? It's 888-827-5536. What is that? That's I don't know what it is. It's a lot of numbers. It's a lot of phone numbers. 8888-ASK-LEO. Most. Okay, now BB in the chat room saying, no, the study shows the most number of distinct items one can remember is usually between 7 and 10. Okay. What isn't that not what I just said? Items could be numbers. They could be things. The other number that is bruited about a lot in the tech world is the Dunbar number. Kind of a debate going on right now over the Dunbar. You know what the Dunbar number is? The Dunbar number is the theoretical limit of the number of people you can have as friends. Like you could say, really, I know those people. They could be work people. They could be your neighborhood. They could be your tribe. But the theoretical number, do you know what that number, the Dunbar number is? Before I tell you, what would you guess is the kind of the maximum number the human brain could kind of understand and grok and know? The theoretical cognitive limit. I'm going to give you the exact definition before I give you the number. The theoretical cognitive limit to the number of people with whom one can maintain stable social relationships. Here, that's a good social scientist definition. British anthropologist Robin Dunbar. He theorized that, quote, this limit is a direct, I probably said it in a British accent, this limit is a direct function of relative neocortex size, and that this in turn limits group size, the limit imposed by neocortical processing capacity, simply the number of individuals with whom a stable interpersonal relationship can be maintained. So the chat room's got all sorts of numbers there. 3.14159, no. Zero. Dr. Mom is obviously a misanthrope. 100. That's a good guess. That's a good guess. Mark Zuckerberg says 5,000. Right. That's how many friends you can have. That's right, Kyle. That's how many friends you can have in the Facebook. Dunbar never said an exact number, but somewhere between 100 and 230. The commonly used value is 150. That's what we, when we say the Dunbar number, that's what we're thinking, 150. And the theory is if you have more than, let's say on Facebook, how many friends do you have on Facebook? I have almost 300, I think. It made me think of this. I was looking at my my Facebook compadres have blossomed. I have way too many friends now. How many Facebook friends do you have? How many people can you keep track of reasonably? And does 150 make sense now in this connected world? Or do you have stable social relations with all the people you know on Facebook? Maybe that would be the other question. Maybe Dunbar would say, well, yes, you certainly have more friends on Facebook. But after all, it doesn't tell you, how many stable social relations I have with them. 299 is how many friends I have. So I'm doubling the Dunbar. Now, he says this is the brain. So it doesn't, it wouldn't be changed by technology. He did this fairly recently in 1992. Dunbar used the correlation observed for non-human primates. So he looked at monkeys, and he predicted a human mean group size of 148. 148. Any more than that, he says, you can't keep track. Your brain, your neocortex can't keep track. He says surveys of village and tribe sizes in primitive societies, about 150. Any more than that, they'd split off another group, right? Group would leave. Grok would take his, people with him. It's too crowded here. I have to start new tribe. And then they'd start a new tribe, and they'd get to 150. And then Ak-Mak, he would take his group off, or she would take her group off. He wrote a great book, by the way, which I have read and love, called Grooming, Gossip, and the Evolution of Language, which I highly recommend. Robin Dunbar. So what do you think? The Dunbar number. Does that make sense to you? How many friends do you have on Facebook? Do we now? Is it possible that technology changes that? Of course, in primitive societies, there were other reasons why a village or a tribe would only get to 150. They were probably limits on how much food production an area could support and all of that stuff. And cities certainly got bigger than that. But it's been observed that even if you live in a city or in a massive group, or you have a bunch of coworkers, that it always seems to come down to your group is never more than 150 people, the people you know at work. In fact, a lot of industrial enterprises, they create groups of workers that are smaller than the overall size. I know that at the Ford plant, when we visited the Ford plant and the Rouge plant in Dearborn, they have smaller teams because you can care. The theory being, I think, that you can care about a smaller group of people. You can't care about, all 15,000 people working in a factory, but you can care about 150 of them and kind of back them. What is I'm sure in the armed forces, same thing, right? There's a unit, isn't there? There's a unit that your unit. And you care about them and you die for them. What is that number? And maybe we have to, as Dr. Mom suggests, redefine what friend means in the Facebook era. Because if it's more than 150, well, who are those people? Who are those other folks that we know? And how many people do you follow? I follow, I think, many people. It's like 1,500 people on Twitter. Now, I wouldn't say I have a relationship with those people. Those are people I listen to. So that's different, isn't it? Is an acquaintance count? No, I think these are people that you have a relationship with, that I don't know if acquaintance, I don't know. That's an interesting question. And does technology change what the inherent limits of our brain are? That's really the question I'm asking. Are our brains changing because of the technology we've surrounded ourselves with? Some people suspect that maybe our attention span is shortening. Because, of YouTube and television, fast cut, you watch MTV, the kids love they love the MTV and how fast that cuts, right? What do you think? Can you remember this number? 888-ASK-LEO. Give me a ring. We'll talk about it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine.
Are you going to count all the way to 150?
10.
Apparently.
10, 9, 8.
Oh, going backwards now. Aren't you smart?
7, 6, 5.
You can remember all those numbers.
4, 3, 2. One.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, Kyle, once again, with the most germane music. Speaking of Facebook, somebody in the chat room passed this article along to me. At first, I thought this is The Onion, but it's not. It's from Digital Trends and Yahoo News, Andrew Coutts writing. Radio and television news anchors in France are no longer allowed to say the words Facebook or Twitter on the air. Now, you might like this idea. Unless the terms are part of a news story prohibiting French news organizations, the government has done this. French government has done this from urging their audience to, let's say, follow us on the Twitter or check out our Facebook page. I guess there was a governmental decree in 1992 preventing the promotion of commercial enterprises on news programs. French government very involved in things like this. The France Conseil Supérieur de l'Audiovisuel. Spokesperson Christine Kelly says, "Why give preference to Facebook, which is worth billions of dollars, when," she said dollars, not francs, "billions of dollars, when there are many other social networks that are struggling for recognition." Completely unclear on the concept, I guess. Yeah, but you see, you don't, when you say follow us on Facebook, you're saying, I admit it. I mean, I wish I could say follow me on Diaspora, but nobody knows what that is or cares. This would be a distortion of competition. If we allow Facebook or the Twitter to be cited on air, it is opening a Pandora's box. Other social networks will complain to us, saying, pourquoi pas? Why not us? Yeah. Okay. I mean, what are you going to say? I can't imagine. Can you imagine the federal government saying to CNN, hey, by the way, you can't say follow us on Twitter anymore? What? That would be commercial promotion. We cannot allow promotion. We'll talk about Windows 8. Lots to say about that. Actually, I'd be very curious what you think about that coming up. And a whole lot more. But I want to get to the phones and find out what you want to talk about. Because really, I could blather on and on. But it's really what you're interested in that matters. Dennis is in Marina Del Rey. Hello, Dennis.
Leo, I hope you're able to help me. I got my first phone. I actually had my first mobile phone back in January of 1960, and I've finally gotten a phone that does what I want it to. It's a Droid X with Verizon.
Oh, I love that phone. Yeah.
Loved it up until yesterday, but I know you talk about Carbonite, which is a great product, but I would encourage everybody to back up your cell phones as well. You know.
Oh, yeah, you bet. Now, one of the nice things about Android is it does have a backup built in, and of course, because you're syncing with the Google services, you can never lose your phone book or your calendar. When you log into your new phone, it will automatically add that, as long as you're syncing with Google. I mean, I guess you don't have to do that, but you should, and it will restore your applications. And then there are third party backup applications as well on the Android platform. What happened to you?
Okay, I upgraded to 233.
Gingerbread.
Yeah, so I thought, you know, what I should have done is to wait. But what I did is I went ahead and updated, and it looked great at first, and all of a sudden programs started quit working. One of them is a great program called Folder Organizer, and then all of the folders I created lost their labels. Then the next thing I had was a journal in there called My Day, and I couldn't access the information. It said you have to use a passcode, and I've never used a passcode for that before. I have another program in there called something Money Safe or Password Safe. I can't access the information in there. I do have a backup program, and I have read some reviews after I bought it. I hope it works. It's called My Backup Pro.
Yeah, that's a good program.
So I'm just wondering, and they tell me I can't go backwards. I can't go to the previous version of the operating system, that if I reboot it and do all that, reset it, I have to go to the current. So what's your advice on what I should do and how I should do it?
I just did a quick search, and I do see news stories. Motorola, Droid X, Gingerbread update, bricks several phones. Some people are reporting bricking. That is not what you're having. That what a bricking is that the phone won't turn on after the update. I mean, anytime you do an operating system update, there's always that risk, whether it's a desktop or the phone. I don't know. I'm trying to see if this is a widespread problem, or if it's, you'd expect it to happen to some phones.
The other thing it's doing is starting to play music, out of the blue from Audio Galaxy, and it's actually trying to do something with, I think it's DLNA, and trying to open that up and doing a lot of weird...
I think it's possible. You just, when you update an operating system in place, sometimes stuff breaks. So it's possible it just was a bad update. What I would do if I were you is I'd kind of start over. So there is in the... In the settings, in the About My Phone, maybe it's in Security, there is a reset command that just resets the phone.
Right.
Deleting all your data and everything. I would do that. It's harmless to do it because you've got a backup.
Right. Is there a better backup program? Because I know that the data is still there. Now,
you want to do a backup right now, to be honest with you, because you don't want to back up what's messed up. So I think what you hope is you have a good backup from before your upgrade.
Yes, sir.
What I would do is wipe the phone. Don't put anything on it yet. Don't log in or anything. Just wipe the phone and then do the software update to Gingerbread. You do want Gingerbread.
Okay.
It's going to improve your battery life. It's going to be faster. It is a good upgrade.
Okay. One other quick question. I don't know. It doesn't show that My Backup Pro saves voicemail messages, but I have a message, and for legal reasons, they call me and gave me some information, so I have to save that. And
you're on Verizon, right?
Right.
Do you use Verizon for your voicemail?
Yeah, I don't ever call in because the system, but it is Verizon voicemail. I know.
Okay, so it's still on the Verizon system. Resetting the phone shouldn't affect that.
Good. Okay.
If you were using Google Voice, you can say, instead of Verizon, I want to use Google Voice. Same thing. It would be saved on the Google Voice servers. I don't think there's any case, correct me if I'm wrong, chat room, I don't think there's any case where the only copy of your voicemail is on your phone. I don't think that's the case, so I wouldn't worry about that. You might, if you want to be sure, I would call Verizon and say, hey, I'm not going to lose anything, am I? What you will lose is... Well, any customizations, and you'll have to re-log in. Have you been syncing with Google Calendar and Google
All the time. Yeah. I probably do at least once a day.
Yeah, well, it should do it automatically. So you're not going to lose. I think you'll be kind of impressed. I think if you reset the phone, in other words, it wipes out everything, all your data and everything, do the Gingerbread update, and then before you do anything else, I would just play with the phone, see that everything's working.
Right.
Then it's very possible that one of the apps you had installed is causing a problem. That's not unusual on Android. Or it was just a bad upgrade. So what I would do is start over. And then once you've got a working upgrade, then log into your Google account. That'll restore your phone. This is all going to take minutes. Restore your phone numbers and your calendar. And then slowly add apps. I think you're going to be fine. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by Carbonite.com. It's backup done right, off-site, online, automatic. I want you to try it free for 2 weeks. Just go to carbonite.com and use my name Leo as the offer code. You don't even need a credit card, just the name Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 888-827-5536. That's a phone number. But, you know, easier than remembering the phone number is remembering our website, techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. And right there, right on the front page of that there, attractive, I say that sarcastically, website, you will find the phone number. You'll also find a link on the left to our chat room. Lovely place. Really do enjoy it. Highly moderated, so it's safe for the whole family. Usually pretty busy, about 659 people in there right now. You'll also find links to the live video, so you can watch my mouth move in sync with what I'm saying. Tips and, of course, show notes for every show, including today's show, 775. So really, you don't have to remember the phone number. Just remember the website, techguylabs.com. And then James DeRuvo, who's writing everything down as I speak, will put everything in there so you don't have to write anything down. Rob in Vacaville, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Rob.
Oh, hi, Leo.
You're on the air. Welcome.
Oh, thank you. I think I'm a little nervous.
Don't be nervous. It's just us. Just us kids.
Just us.
Nobody else is listening.
How many followers do you have right now?
On Twitter? I mean, in the real world, I have 150 friends. Does that number make sense to you, Jerry? That notion that you could only really keep track of in your neocortex about 150 people. How many people do you know online? Is it more than that?
Me?
I'm Rob. I said Jerry. I meant Rob. Yeah.
Yeah. No. I'm not super social that way. My face. Yeah. I keep it down to 50, and actually, that's probably more than I really know really well.
I think that's good. I think that's healthy. I think those of us who have embraced the digital era a little too heartily are suffering from overload. You know, I get too many emails. I have too much stuff flying at me on Facebook and Twitter, and you can't absorb it all, and you get very scattered. I think it's possible.
Facebook feed on my BlackBerry, and I got overload. It was too much.
Yeah.
What people had for dinner last night. So I
right.
Just cut that out.
Right. Even with 50 friends.
Yeah. Yeah. Could be.
I think that it makes you nuts. And I think in the long run, I may end up, you know, you might hear someday, well, the Tech Guy show is over. We got a gardening show here because Leo has decided to disconnect from the world and become a monk. Because I think, you know, don't you crave that every once in a while? I just want to turn off all that stuff.
Yeah.
Nice and quiet.
Yeah, I miss you, though.
Well, I'll keep doing it. You know, and this is the other side. This is the dark side of it. I'm totally addicted. I can't get up in the morning without checking my feeds and seeing what my friends had for breakfast. My phony friends that I've never met who didn't care a lick about me. Anyway, enough of that, Rob. What can I do for you?
Well, I've got an old BlackBerry that works, but I sort of would like a new phone and a new smartphone, and I'll tell you a couple twists that apply to me. Even though I'm shy, I'm a healthcare provider, so I need something that's very secure, and
yes.
I also sync it with a laptop. I use Microsoft Office, and that hard drive's encrypted and all that jazz. So I'm wondering whether I need to stay with my old BlackBerry or whether I could go to an Android or an iPhone and keep my data very secure with patient appointments and such. And I wanted to know what you think about that.
You need your phone to be HIPAA compliant.
Yes, I do.
Does the law require? I guess if you're getting patient emails on there and you're keeping patient records on there, it would have to be, wouldn't it?
I don't have too much in the way of emails because I discourage my patients from doing that, but just their names and their addresses,
right,
that information.
I'm looking at our chat room. We have another doc in there, Dr. Mom, and she pays attention to this stuff. She says HIPAA apparently has never considered the use of handhelds. She says she talked to them years ago and there are no standards. However, having said that, I think you're right to be concerned. Regardless of what the law requires, you as a... you know, responsible healthcare provider have some standards.
Absolutely.
So, I do think BlackBerry's more secure. They certainly have paid attention to security. It's used in government and industry. Now, we've seen hacks. We've seen the BlackBerry Enterprise server be hacked. We've even seen governments, such as the Indian government, demand that BlackBerry give them the keys to the server because they don't like it that people can do stuff securely without government oversight. So there is some question about how thoroughly private a BlackBerry is. I think Apple has paid good attention to security. I think Android has paid none. So if you wanted to rank them in terms of privacy and security, I'd say BlackBerry, iPhone, and then way down the list, Android.
Is the information on the iPhone, is that able to be encrypted?
It is. But there have been many leaks.
People can't access that information?
In theory, but we've learned that they can.
Oh, ouch.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that's part of the problem is that what we're finding out is that when handhelds are a target of attack, they're not nearly as secure as the companies that make them have promised. And that they've only recently been the target of attack. If since you like BlackBerry and you're happy with BlackBerry, if I would suggest if you can survive a couple more months, the new BlackBerry 9900 or 9930, depending on what features you want, is very nice. Very nice. But it won't be out till we think till this fall.
Does that still have the...
It's got a keyboard. So you still have your BlackBerry keyboard, but it has a touch screen as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there aren't as many apps for BlackBerries as there are for the iPhone or Android phone. So I don't know if your app...
It's a little hard on my old eyes.
And it is a smaller screen. You're right. It's not. It's kind of black. It looks very much like the Curve. Probably looks a lot like the BlackBerry you have right now.
Uh-huh.
But it's a much faster processor. It's got a better camera. Although camera is a security problem as well, isn't it? I would say that you probably find if you want a bigger screen, an easier, more legible screen, you'd find with the iPhone. If you lost your phone, the nice thing about the iPhone, this is the real risk is you having some patient information on your phone, like their names and addresses, and losing it. And so what you do with any phone, including the iPhone, is you lock it so that somebody can't just casually turn it on and see. And then further, the iPhone allows you to turn on some useful features that will help you. For instance, you can turn on a feature that says if somebody tries to guess the password 10 times, wipe the phone. Which is good. And you can also wipe it remotely with a Find My iPhone. So if you lose your phone, you could press a button on your computer that says erase that phone, which I think is then a very good additional security.
If I have the phone locked with a password, is the data inside encrypted?
Yeah, well, theoretically, yes. The real question is theory versus practice. I'm not convinced that it's unhackable, but how would they get into it? In other words, they can't just plug it in and get around your passcode.
Okay, that's good.
So in that sense, yes, it's protected.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Lots of physicians use iPhones now.
Sell it.
I wouldn't be afraid of the iPhone, but I would also be sensible about security in general, whatever phone you're using. Hey, thanks for the call, Rob. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We do talk about cell phones. Last two calls are about cell phones, but also computers and the internet. Anything with a chip in it, anything digital. I have to say that all the action is in the tablet and the cell phone, in the mobile space, right? Carrying these things around. This is where all the innovation is happening. And now Microsoft's Windows 8 They showed it a couple of different places. One at a Taiwanese computer conference called Computex, big show for hardware manufacturers. And then what's his first name? David Sinofsky? Peter Sinofsky? Fred Sinofsky? What's Sinofsky's first name? Yeah, nobody remembers. Anyway, Sinofsky was speaking at the All Things Digital Conference, D9, and did a big exposition on Windows 8. He's a guy in charge of Windows 8 and has a lot of respect from the developer community, from the Windows... Steven Sinofsky. Thank you, Nicholas. From the aficionado community. And so I think everybody's very happy that Sinofsky is working on Windows 8. But it's interesting. This will be a very big difference. As different as, let's say, Windows 95 was from Windows 3.1. Because it's a touch interface. What they've done is they've still got Windows, and it'll look a lot, I think Windows 8 will look a lot like Windows 7 under the hood. So if you run Microsoft Office or Excel or one of the, you know, kind of old school Windows programs, Windows will be there with a start menu and all of that stuff. And right now it looks like Windows 7. Of course, they'll probably mess around with it a little bit before it comes out next year. So it may not look like Windows 7 by that time. But right now it's Windows 7. But then on top of it, instead of the traditional Explorer, which is what Microsoft calls the user interface for the desktop, they've got this new thing, which is very Windows Phone looking, very tiley and touch, and you swipe things around. You can move things over to the side. And it coexists with, so you have Microsoft Excel running, and you could swoop it over to the side and have the tiles. And it's a very different looking user interface and very much influenced by Apple. In fact, that's one of the things that I took away from all of this is how much Apple, with the iOS, the iPhone, and the iPad, has influenced computing and how people think about user interfaces. Huge. Now, Apple themselves have said, we're not going to do a touch screen on a desktop or a laptop because who wants to hold their arm out that long? And Microsoft, Sinofsky did show that you could use the mouse or the keyboard to do the swiping. But, you know, frankly, when you have a touch interface, using a mouse or keyboard to do it is not desirable. So it'll be interesting to see whether people just kind of slide those tiles out of the way and start using their mouse and keyboard and use Windows as normal. Or whether they really want that tiled interface and the swiping and the swooping and the pinching and the zooming. In one respect, I absolutely commend Microsoft for saying, let's rethink this. Let's reconsider what a desktop operating system should be like, should work like. That kind of thinking should happen all the time. And not for marketing purposes, not to say, oh, you got to buy a new version because we've modified it, and now you don't want the old version, you want the new. But really, for genuine reasons, for reasons of making it easier to use and more effective. And we'll see if it's that. I think it's hard for us to know, frankly, until we sit down and use it. But I commend them for trying, for doing something. Windows 8. We don't even know if they're going to call it Windows 8. We don't even know when it'll come out. We'll probably see, I would guess, early public betas by the end of this year and a release sometime around a year from now, middle of 2012. And whether it'll be called Windows 8, no one knows. I hope it's called Windows 8. That would be a nice logical name, but Microsoft's not notorious for picking logical names for their operating systems. It looks good. I'd love to hear what you think about it. For those of you who saw it, you can go to Microsoft.com/PressPass, and they've got a lot of videos online, so you can get a good look at it. Microsoft.com/PressPass. Apple on Monday is going to be announcing their new operating system, OS X Lion, showing it. They'll also show iOS 5. So it's kind of there. It's this tick-tock, isn't it? Apple does something, then the other guys do something, then the Apple does something, then the other guys do something. It's this tick-tock. We've heard the tick. Let's hear the talk. I don't think you're certainly not going to see any big changes in Lion based on what Microsoft has done. It's, you know, it's kind of fully baked anyway. And I think Apple is eschewing the idea of turning their desktop into a tablet. That's why they have two different operating systems, OS X and iOS, and I don't think they want to merge them particularly. However, we do know that Lion will have some features that look a little bit like Windows 8, full screen, for instance. Many apps, if not eventually all apps, will run in a full screen mode that eliminates anything else. You know, the app takes over, just as an app takes over on the iPad or the iPhone, it becomes the full system. You know, you don't see any operating system stuff when you're running an app on the iPad. And that's apparently where they're going to go with OS X. Lion. Apple also will announce, they've told us for the first time I can ever remember, they put out a press release saying this is what we're going to talk about. They have told us they will also announce something called the iCloud. I don't know if this is a replacement for the iCloud. Is that a replacement for Mobile Me? We're pretty sure it's a music system, among other things. So this will be interesting. We'll find out on Monday. But I'll talk about it that a little later on in the show, too. What my speculation is. We're going to get back to the phones in just a second. Jay in Woodland Hills wants to go to a boot camp, I guess, and wants to know if Skype is a good choice. Jay and another Jay in Van Nuys wants to know, how do I know my antivirus is doing anything? That's a good question. But before we do that, let me talk about backing up, because, you know, a key in your disaster scenario is having a good backup. No matter, you know, what you do on a computer, things will go wrong. You will accidentally trash a file. Your hard drive might die. They do die. They all die. You might lose your phone or your desktop. You might lose your laptop. All of these things can be disaster if you don't have a good backup. So I'm always talking about backup. And why, frankly, I recommend a solution like Carbonite. Carbonite is great. Carbonite does two things that I think every backup needs to do. One, it's automatic, so you don't have to think about it. Two, it's in the cloud. It's on the internet. So you always have access to your data, Mac or PC, or even on a smartphone. One thing they've just done, and I'm really proud of them, is they've revamped their tech support. You know, support is so important. And unfortunately, nowadays, companies are really cutting back their outsourcing their tech support and stuff. Carbonite just announced they're opening a new technical support center in Lewiston, Maine. They're going to move their entire overseas customer support back to the U.S., hiring more than 250 American workers in Maine. So that's good. And getting great customer support. I got an email from my buddy David Friend, who's a CEO over there at Carbonite. And he said, just, you know, over and over again, we found, because they, you know, all the executives do customer support there. That's part of the deal, that they have to do at least an hour a week of customer service. They'll go down to the call center. And he said, what we found is that when we did the customer service, people were so much happier than when the offsite outsourced customer service. So we decided, let's take it back in-house. Let's hire U.S. customer support technicians. Let's give them the best training, and that way you get the best support. You got to love this. Just one more reason to love Carbonite. Try it free for 2 weeks. Go to Carbonite.com. Use my name, Leo. And when you decide to buy PC or Mac, just $59 a year. But you can extend that 12-month subscription to 14 months when you use my name, Leo. Two free months when you decide to buy. Carbonite.com. Use the offer code, Leo. I took a little while to do that, but I wanted to tell everybody that they've done that. I think this is so great. Love to hear that. Love to hear that. Jay in Van Nuys, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jay.
Well, hi there. I'm so glad to get hold of you.
Thanks for calling.
Well, you know, you advertise that Nod 32, and I like it a lot, I think. I just don't know if it's working.
That's actually one of the reasons I like Nod 32, because it doesn't get in the way. You know, some of these other antivirus solutions, you know they're there because they stop you from doing things. They slow you down. They're very annoying and intrusive. And the reason I use Nod 32 is because it really gets out of the way. Yes, it's working. You can see it in the system tray. You can see the little icon there.
Right. Well, here's what. Let me explain. The one reason I went to the Nod 32 was because I had the McAfee, and it not only was my computer really slow running, but then I clicked on. They had some photo that I was looking at, or I wanted to look at a photo.
Hold on just a second, because I have to take a break. But we'll come back to you first thing after the local news. Okay. And then I'll hear the story. Thank you, Jay. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And we're talking about technology and a lot of scary stuff, privacy violations, security violations. But we can talk about the good stuff, too, how you change the world with technology. It's all part of the, it's all grist for the mill, as they say. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number if you want to talk about it. 888-827-5536, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. You know, the easiest way to get the phone number, just go to our website. TechGuyLabs.com. It's in big letters right on the front there. TechGuyLabs.com. Now, I hated to do it, but I had to interrupt Jay in Van Nuys. I hope he's still on the line. You still there, Jay?
Hi, I'm back here.
Thank you for your patience. I appreciate it. We were talking about your antivirus. You went from a bloated McAfee to the lightweight Nod 32, and now you're concerned it's not working.
Well, yeah, everything just moves so fast now. Move faster.
But, isn't that funny? It's just so funny. Yeah, I mean,
let me tell you.
First of all, disclaimer: they're an advertiser. But this was one of the reasons they're an advertiser is because I was singing the praises of this product years before they started advertising, and they heard me and they said, "Well, we really should buy ads." Because I had the same reaction, which is, "Wow, I didn't know I could have an antivirus running in the background and still use my machine."
Yeah. The thing is, I clicked on it. What motivated me was I clicked on a picture, and all of a sudden, all this stuff started coming up, and then a big screen came up and said, "Trojan virus, this and that virus. Download this now." And it looked like they were spoofing a McAfee site or something.
Yes, they were, and that is a very well known ploy, and it happens on Macs now too. And I take it your radar went off and you didn't do it.
That's right. As soon as I saw that, I knew something was going on. And when it downloaded so quickly, when it just like popped up and boom, 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 boom.
It's not doing anything. That's just a window.
Oh.
It's not actually doing. The reason it looks so fast, it ain't doing anything. That's an animated GIF.
I see.
It looks the same on everybody's machine. It's an animated GIF.
Something else happened, though, earlier. Where even though I have McAfee, somehow somebody hacked into my contacts list and sent stuff to all my friends saying, you know, for Viagra ads stuff.
Yeah.
So I naturally.
We've had that call too, and one way that it happens is not a compromise on your system, but on your email system.
Oh, so it wasn't like they hacked into my computer.
No, they could have easily hacked your email system. Do you use internet mail or you use your internet service provider's mail?
I guess it's Yahoo. It's internet.
Yeah, this happens all the time on Yahoo Mail. So,
yeah.
So your job number one, I hope you did this by now, but if not, is to change your Yahoo password.
Well, I hadn't actually done it. I haven't had the problem since, but I think...
No, change your password. They have your password.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, I'll...
That's how they did it.
Change it to
something that is long and annoying.
And not only that, it's like it's hard to remember all the passwords.
Yeah, long, hard to remember, annoying. That means it's good. I'll tell you in a second after we finish your immediate concern. I'll tell you how to do that in a way that you can remember it, but is effective because there are some solutions for that. But I do want to cover this pop-up because it happens. It's just a pop-up. You've seen other pop-ups. You've seen pop-up ads before, right? That's all that is. What happens is the bad guy either hacks a site, actually almost always is hacked a website, and then puts some code on that site without the knowledge of the guy who's running the site that does that, that pops up the window.
Okay.
So you get it when you're surfing around. an antivirus isn't going to block that. And this is the challenge of writing an antivirus, is the balance between total security and total inconvenience. We can make you totally secure, but you're going to hate us. Because, for instance, an antivirus could block all pop-ups.
Yeah.
But that's, you don't want that. You don't want the antivirus starting to interfere with how you surf the net. What you want it to do, and this is what a good antivirus would do, is when you click that link to, say, download the, quote, virus protection, which a lot of people do, it would say, whoa, hold on, that's not what you think it is. That's when it should interfere.
Yeah, that would be great. Unfortunately, yeah, the way these things tend to work, and I've heard nowadays they suck people in by making them pop up.
Exactly. It's what we call social engineering. Yeah. My friend Kevin Mitnick, who is a convicted hacker, one of a top hacker out there, wrote a whole book on social engineering. And it is the most effective way to hack. It's not technical. It's not, you know, how do I brute force crack your password? It's how do I talk you into giving me your password? How do I trick you? And if you look nowadays, almost all the effective malware exploits involve tricking you.
No. Can I have another two more quick questions.
Sure.
One of them is, I bought Windows XP Professional about 2.5 years ago and never loaded it in. And I'm just wondering, is that like they don't support it anymore?
No, they do support it. You'll install it and you'll get Service Pack 3 on there, and they support everything from Service Pack 3 on, and they'll support that for a few more years.
Well, because, I mean,
it is old. It is old. I mean, now we're talking Windows 8, which is three versions later than XP.
I spent like $600. I think it charged me, like, because they told me I couldn't have more than one loaded onto a computer, so I had to buy two. So.
Oh yeah, you can't use one copy of Windows on multiple computers. That's right.
Right, which I find really, I know why they do it, but it's still an aggravation and possibly.
Well, they want you to pay for each and every copy of Windows you use. That's how they do it.
A couple other things is that I also have a copy of AutoCAD, which is registered on my laptop, but I no longer have the registration number, so I can't. Then that is the same thing. That one, that version in 2000, I think it was 2004, could be moved from computer to computer. Now
they've changed that. Yeah, they'll lock that down.
So now it's like if I lose this copy, I can't like load it onto another computer because I don't have
right.
the registration number. And
if you think your system is in good shape, like you don't have any infections, which it sounds like you're in good shape, you might want to just run the Microsoft Safety Scanner real quickly just to make sure there's nothing on there. This is a new tool that Microsoft just offered for free. It's not a replacement for an antivirus, but it does give you already have Nod32. This would, you run this just to say, hey, is my system clean? If it is, then I would make a image of your drive that includes the AutoCAD, because you could restore that image and your AutoCAD will continue working. The program I would suggest using, there are a number of programs to do that drive image. We used to talk about Norton Ghost and all of that. There are a number of good programs. EaseUS makes a great a program to do that. Drive Image XML does that. There's a program called Clonezilla. Clonezilla is a little harder to use because Clonezilla, you have to make a boot disk. But there's an advantage to doing that. You make a boot CD, and it will then make an image of your hard drive. That image can be restored in minutes. And I think, a very good idea, a very good practice to have an image of your hard drive that's clean and working. So that's faster than installing Windows again, right? You just blast that image back onto the hard drive, and it has an additional advantage because that image includes all your apps, including that AutoCAD, and it will continue to run. Clonezilla is good. It's a little trickier to use because you have to burn a CD, but there's an advantage to doing that. You will boot up to the CD and then blast the image, and so there's... I think this is a good way to go, and it's free, totally free. Works on all operating systems, including Windows. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it, Jay. Glad we could solve those issues. Be aware if you see those pop-ups. Be skeptical. Be a cynic. It's okay. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, actually, my studio manager let the dog out. My dog, my little Papillon Ozzy, is joining us on the show today. So you hear a little barking every once in a while. Kyle, you are rocking it today. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, Kyle Benham on the board. Is Erin running the phones today? I think she is. Or is that tomorrow? Gina Yates is on the phones today. Erin will be on the phones tomorrow. All right. Nice to see you all. Thank you for joining me. 8888-ASK-LEO is my phone number. 888-827-5536. We're talking about computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, anything with a chip in it. 888-827-5536. The website is techguylabs.com. And you'll find all the show notes there, everything, links to everything I talk about. Microsoft released another, we were talking about the Microsoft scanner. You know, it's interesting because Microsoft has finally taken the bull by the horns on security. For I would say for a couple of years, they kind of just ignored the fact that Windows was a security nightmare and that the virus authors were winning. They patched, and they've been patching, and they patch all the time, and that helps. It fixes things, but they kind of, and I understand why they got their hands spanked a little bit when they put Internet Explorer into Windows. Remember, the Department of Justice investigated them, and the European Union investigated them for restraint of trade and anti-competitive, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So and this was all because Netscape and others and Opera said, wait a minute, why are they putting a browser in Windows? Well, because you need a browser and an operating system. So I think Microsoft was very slow to approach this issue of should we have an antivirus in Windows? There was a very brisk, robust, and there still is, ecosystem of third-party antivirus programs, not just Norton and McAfee, but Kaspersky and Nod32, a lot of free ones like Avast and Antivir and AVG. And I think Microsoft thought, you know, if we put it in Windows ourselves, we're just going to put these guys out of business and we're going to get sued by the Department of Justice. On the other hand, who better to put an antivirus on the operating system than the operating system manufacturer? They have a firewall in Windows, not a very good one. They really ought to have a better one. It's gotten better, but it's still, you know, it could be better. But they have a firewall in there. That belongs there. They really ought to have, you know, some sort of antivirus stuff. Well, they bought a company called Giant a few years ago, and they bought their antivirus. And they turned that into Microsoft Security Essentials. They still don't bundle it with Windows. I think the time will come. Maybe Windows 8, where it'll just come with Windows. They've kind of given enough notice now to the antivirus companies. Look, we're going to move into this space because we ought to. We need to. We should. We have to protect our users. And so they've got Security Essentials. Now they've got this scanner product that I mentioned. We'll put a link in the show notes to that. And they've now got an anti-rootkit solution. And, of course, because they don't want to step on the toes of the companies that make antiviruses, they haven't really talked about it. but if you call Microsoft and you have a security issue, unlike Apple, by the way, Apple denies right now. If you call Apple and say I have a Mac Defender, they'll point you to an article, they'll point you to third-party sites, but they will not fix it for you. That's not what Microsoft, good news, that's not what Microsoft does. Microsoft has been making tools, and if you call them, they will help you with tools. There was a rootkit called the Allurion that was causing real problems a couple of months ago on XP machines. What is a rootkit? Oh, it's the kind of the worst thing that can happen to you. the rootkit hides, when a rootkit is on your operating system, it allows the bad guy to put something on your system that the operating system itself cannot see. It cannot see. It's hidden. They modify the operating system in such a way that files are invisible to it. Now, that means if the operating system can't see it, in most cases, an antivirus program, which uses the operating system services, can't see it either. So it's a pretty nasty way to put stuff on a system. It's kind of the best tool that the hackers have these days. It's a rootkit. Now, good antiviruses, modern antiviruses, do have anti-rootkit solutions. But now, finally, Microsoft has put out a rootkit scanner for Windows. Now, the only way you can make this work is by making a CD that you boot from. Because remember, the operating system can't see the bad stuff. So you have to actually boot a new operating system. And then you can scan your system and find the rootkit that's been hidden away on it. So I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Because Microsoft, when if you go to the page for the rootkit, it's a long URL. I know I'm not going to give it out. But if you go to the page for the anti-rootkit solution for Microsoft, it says, you've been sent here by Microsoft support. They're not telling anybody about it. Unless you call them. But I really think we ought to tell people about it. Don't you? I think so. If Microsoft's got a tool. They say it's in beta. It's not that they don't want people to know about it, but they're just not. I think really it comes from the fact they don't want to step on the toes of the antivirus authors, frankly. But they've got now a number of great programs to fight bad guys. You've got the Microsoft Security Essentials. That's Microsoft.com/Security Essentials. They've got the malicious software removal tool, which is on all computers. That's a pretty cool solution. They've got this software scanner that I mentioned earlier. Does a pretty good job. And now they've got this rootkit scanner. They have a pretty good collection of things to fight the bad guys. So I'll put on the show notes, and I'll send this, James, I'll send this to you in the chat room. I'll put a link to all of the different tools that Microsoft offers. And if you go to techguylabs.com and this episode 775, there'll be three different links of things that you are free, you can download and use. The rootkit one, as I said, is a little of the three, the most tricky. You don't install it on your system. You have to burn a disk with it. But a good tool to have in your kit. And if you're, and I know a lot of people who listen are the kind of tech people that others go to for support. You know, you're the experts. If you're one of those people, this would be a good thing to have in your kit. Many of us have a little bag of CDs we bring around to help scan our friends' computers. This would be one absolutely to have. I suspect all of this will be built into Windows 8. I think Microsoft has kind of said, officially and unofficially, hey, guys, I know you're making a lot of money on antiviruses, but really, we need to do this. It's best in the operating system. One of the reasons you don't put it on a USB stick, Jeff's asked me in the chat room, can't I put it on a USB stick? One of the reasons you don't want to do that is because that's writable. You want to put it on media that can't be written to, so that if the bad guy sees you running the program, he can't mess with it, right? That would be bad. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. I will go back to the phones and answer your calls about anything in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is, yes, it's comfortably numb, but it's also brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet at an amazing price. Call 866-2-GET-NET to get DSL Extreme, or visit them online at dslextreme.com. We're talking offline about a great documentary I watched last night on Netflix streaming. Do you do Netflix streaming? About the making of that song and the album. Actually, that's from The Wall, isn't it? It was about the making of Dark Side of the Moon, but that's from The Wall. Sorry, but we were talking about Pink Floyd and The Wall concert, which I was lucky enough to see thanks to Jammer B, John Slanina, my studio manager, who got us all tickets to go see The Wall. We got a party bus and went to see The Wall a few months ago. Boy, I'll never forget that. Never forget that. That was an amazing concert with Roger Waters. 8888-ASK-LEO is a phone number. You can meet Jammer B in the chat room, by the way, and everybody else by going to techguylabs.com. That's the website. And that will also, if you go to show 775, today's show, Saturday's show, that will also have the links to the Microsoft tools I talk about. Now, actually, as I think about it, there are four Microsoft security tools. And you're right. I don't know why they don't just make one overall, but I guess it's, again, because they don't want to step on the antivirus company's toes. But they've got the Microsoft Security Essentials, which is essentially an antivirus, free antivirus. They have the Microsoft Sweeper. They have the Microsoft Scanner, and they have the Malicious Software Removal Tool. Of the four, the one you already have, you may not know it, is MRT, the Microsoft Malicious Software Removal Tool, because that's on all versions of Windows as long as you've been keeping it up to date. And every second Tuesday of the month, they update that and do a scan. But they don't do a thorough scan, and so not a bad idea if you are a Windows user and you've been keeping Windows up to date, XP, Vista, or Windows 7, to maybe do it right now while you're just sitting there. Click Start, select Run from the Start menu, and type this in the little box that comes up. Type this, MRT, and hit Return. That'll launch. It's not a command line tool. It's a graphic tool, but they just don't put an icon in the, I don't know why. They don't. You could make an icon for it on your desktop if you wanted. Maybe not a bad idea. MRT, run it. Do a thorough scan, and that's something that doesn't normally get done. That'll take a while. And that's why Microsoft doesn't do it automatically. But every once in a while, not a bad idea. If you've best time to do it would be the second Tuesday after you do the patches, the patch Tuesday. 8888-ASK-LEO. It's just, you know, the good news is because of all the aggressive work Microsoft has done, both updating Windows continually, but also offering these security tools and educating people, it's now estimated that 80% of Windows users are running antivirus software. Windows users are much smarter about protecting themselves, and I think we're turning the corner on that. Of course, the irony is, because of that, bad guys are turning elsewhere to attack people. There's still the same impetus for bad guys to take over systems. They want, you know, they use them to send spam or attack other systems. They use them to try to crack, you know, get your credit card numbers and other things. And there's still, you know, that incentive to do that, it's good money. So there are two things that bad guys have turned to. Instead of trying to attack Windows, they still do that, but they also attack third-party applications on Windows, particularly Adobe apps. They've been a target lately. So Adobe Flash and Acrobat have been huge, huge targets for the bad guys. So you got to make sure you keep those apps updated too. And there's no automatic updater for some of these things. So keep your apps up to date. When there's an update for an app, often it's a security fix. The other thing that's happened is they've started attacking the Mac. You know, it was as always a numbers game. It turns out the Mac was always vulnerable, but it was a numbers game that there was no reason to attack the Mac as long as there were plenty of Windows users, lots of low-hanging fruit on the Windows side, and they already knew how to write the programs. So they would attack the Windows users. But now that 80% of Windows users have antiviruses, that means there's only 20% of them are vulnerable. Well, guess what? The Macintosh market share is about 17%. So it's about the same, right? So there's, I would say very roughly, almost the same number of vulnerable Mac users, since nobody on the Mac runs antivirus software. There's roughly the same number of vulnerable Mac users as there are vulnerable Windows users. Well, guess what? It's not just the good guys have noticed that, the bad guys have noticed it too, and that's why We're now seeing attack kits distributed for Macintosh and this Mac Defender. Apple, it's, boy, you know, Apple this week, I think it was on Wednesday, released an update. I hope you saw it when you ran your Mac, if you're a Mac user, that added a defense to the Mac. They've always had, it turns out, we didn't know this, but they've always had anti-malware software on the Macintosh. They didn't talk about it. They've always been watching for this kind of thing. They added information about Mac Defender to that. Mac Defender was getting pretty bad. In fact, they'd come up with a way to attack Macintoshes without demanding the administrator password, which means it could run almost completely without any intervention on your part. Just boom, boom, boom. So Apple responded with a patch to the operating system. Within 2 hours, the bad guys figured out a way around that patch. Yeah, didn't take long. So welcome, Mac users. Welcome to the wonderful world of bad guys. You know, and there's always a Mac guy, and there's somebody in the chat room saying this, Mac Defender is not a virus, it's malware. Excuse me, pardon me. Let's not get all technical and semantic. Does it attack your system? Does it get on your system? Does it screw you up? Yes. It's as bad as anything else. What you call it doesn't matter. Virus, worm, Trojan horse, malware. It's all malware. It's all bad stuff. Malware is the new term. We'll use malware from now on. Somebody in the chat room said, you sound happy. I don't. I'm not. Believe me, I'm not. Because for years, I recommend, and I still recommend, people use Macs at home. For one of the main reasons was because you didn't have to worry about security so much. Well, now you do. That doesn't make me happy. I guess if I'm happy, the one, it's not happy, but it is, it answers the question that we've had so long about whether the Mac was somehow inherently safer or just under attacked. At first, I used to think that the Mac was somehow secure, more secure. And then I came to believe over time that unfortunately, it's not more secure. There's plenty of holes on the Mac. It's just that virus authors haven't attacked it. And that argument's been going back and forth. It's a pretty academic argument, but that argument's been going back and forth. Well, now we know. Now we know. It was the latter. It was just there wasn't any percentage in it. So if you're a Mac user, pay attention. Pay attention. It does not make me happy. It makes me sad. It just makes me sad in general that this is something we have to worry about, that there are creeps out there who try to do this. Jerry in Long Beach, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jerry. I hope I haven't scared you off from computing.
No, not at all. I'm finding it interesting, even though I'm a novice. I'm a 70-year-old guy just taking the beginning computer course with some other seniors, and I have, of course, I wear trifocals, a little bit of eye problem. They're recommending a laptop. I thought maybe a 17-inch laptop would be better for vision things.
Although when you get that big in a laptop, it's almost, you might as well have bought a desktop. I mean, it's so big. Why do they do you want a laptop? Forget what they say. Do you want a laptop? Do you want the ability to carry your computer around?
Yeah, I guess sort of. You know, I'm not sure. I'm kind of torn between the two because I kind of like the desktops that they... The one reason that they recommend a laptop is if I have a problem with it, which I'm a novice, so I'm going to... I can just bring it in, and then they can look it over and tell me what I'm doing wrong in that.
Yeah. I'll tell you what. I would love to give you kind of the landscape in a totally objective way. Can you hold on for a moment? We're going to take a little break, and I would like to spend some time with you because there's a lot of choices for people, and this isn't an easy thing to do, but I do want to encourage you to do it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're going to take some time right now. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. Jerry in Long Beach called. His first computer. He's been taking computer classes. You've been told to get a laptop for, I don't know if for a very compelling reason, which is it's easy to carry it in.
Right.
And have somebody help you with it.
Exactly.
Yeah, I guess that's a compelling reason. On the other hand, you mentioned that your eyesight is not as good as it used to be. And even a 17-inch screen is considerably smaller than a standard desktop screen.
Right. So the desktop will be much better viewing for me.
Oh, absolutely. Although what's interesting, what they do now, you get a 27-inch screen, let's say.
Right.
What they do is they make them very high resolution. So everything is still tiny. You just have more of it.
Uh-huh.
But you can change the resolution. You can make it easier to see. You could do that on a laptop, too. I think, you know, in general, modern operating systems do allow you to increase the size of icons, text, user interface items in a way that you probably can handle that. I wear trifocals, too. I don't find it too much difficulty.
Uh-huh. There isn't that much difference in viewing then between the laptop and the desktop, or what would you think?
Well, no. In fact, there isn't. When you get a bigger screen, you don't get bigger stuff. You get more space.
Right.
The stuff stays roughly the same size.
Oh, okay.
So that's. But on the other hand, a 17-inch laptop is pretty massive.
Uh-huh.
Now, one thing you can do with almost all laptops is connect them. When you sit down at your desk, connect them to a bigger screen, and that might be the solution for you.
Oh, I see. Right.
If you can afford to spend a little extra on a second screen.
Oh, I see. A second screen at home, then I could hook.
Yeah. Let me ask you. What's your interest in computing? What is it that you want to get out of this, Jerry?
Really, I'm not interested in games at all, but I'd like to be able to get on the internet and email.
Yeah. That's, you know what? That's 99% of what everybody does.
Uh-huh.
Internet, email.
Right.
Almost any computer will be very effective for that.
Uh-huh. Would you say that's a compelling reason to get a laptop because I can bring it in to these guys who'll look at it and tell me what I'm doing wrong or something like that or what I've done wrong?
I hate for that to be the only reason to get a laptop.
Right.
You know, desktops have a lot of advantages. You get more bang for your buck, for one thing.
Oh.
They're more robust because they stay in one place. You know, laptops tend to get banged around even if you don't bang them around.
Right.
Keyboards are better on desktops. Screens are better on desktops. And you have more choices on desktops. The other direction, and I wouldn't ignore this, is an iPad. I mean, an iPad is a very good choice for just simply email and surfing.
Oh, okay.
And it's a lot cheaper. So there's a range. Now, the reason I asked what your interests are, if you want to learn about computers, the iPad's terrible for that because there's nothing really you can learn. You just use it.
Right. Gotcha. So generally, the desktop would probably be better for me. And I shouldn't maybe have that many problems anyway if I take the proper.
I bet. Now, you're taking a class, which is great.
Right.
Do you have friends or family that are computer users?
I have some friends that are.
And they use Windows?
Yes.
So that's a good reason to get a Windows machine. Normally, I would say for a home user, a Mac would be a better choice, but...
Would be, huh? Generally, a Mac would be a better choice.
I think even though there are some, as I mentioned earlier, now we have security issues on the Mac, there's still nowhere, you know, there's one piece of malware compared to about 150,000 on the Windows side.
Right.
So...
Is there a big difference in cost between them? Or?
There is. Macs are more expensive, so if you're very price sensitive, a Mac isn't a good choice. Although, you got to be careful about underspending on a PC. You can get $250 netbooks, and it's almost you throwing the money away because it's such a junky computer.
Right.
So I'd say you're going to want to spend $500, $600, $700, $800 even on a PC.
What would that say? They're telling me it'd probably be about $650 or so by the.
Yeah, that's about right. That's about right.
What would that same amount? What would that cost me for an Apple then?
Cheapest Apple is $1,000.
Oh, okay.
Here's what I would do as part of your research, though, Jerry. I'd go to you're calling from Long Beach. I'd go to the Apple store.
Okay.
And I'd do two things. I'd look at the, actually three things. I'd look at the Apple laptops, the Apple desktops, the iMac, and then I'd look at an iPad.
Uh-huh.
And just play with them a little bit and see, you know, just get a feeling for that. And then go to your local Best Buy and look at the, or you know, big box store, a lot of places you can get PCs, and play with the PCs. Get a feel for it. Nowadays with Windows 7, there's not a whole lot of difference between Mac and Windows.
Uh-huh.
I think they're fairly similar, but they are both more complex than an iPad.
Right. And you'd probably say I'd be better off myself with a with a desktop anyway, and probably
I think if vision, you know, visibility is one issue for you, ease of use, a desktop's nice. I mean, unless you want to go to the bookstore, the library, the coffee shop with your computer.
Oh, I probably wouldn't do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not enough to say just so I could bring it to my friends so they can help me.
Oh,
have them come over.
Because I shouldn't have that many problems, probably.
Yeah, no, you're not. It's going to be a challenge. It's going to be a learning curve. I think, unfortunately, the technology industry tries to sell this stuff as anybody can sit down and use it. And I don't think that's the case. Maybe it's the case with tablets, but certainly not the case with computers, you know, desktop or laptop. It's like learning to play an instrument. You're going to spend some time with it. But I think you're not. Surfing an email is pretty straightforward. I don't think you're going to have trouble. You're taking a class. Have some nice beer, nice cold beer in the fridge. Invite your friends. Say, hey, come over. I'll buy you a beer. You could show me a couple of things. Yeah, I wouldn't buy a laptop just so you could bring it to your friends. Make them come to you. And as the chat room is pointing out, and I think this is true, refurbs are a great deal if you buy them from the manufacturer. So if you're going to get a Dell, for instance, go to Dell.com/outlet. Apple has refurbs too. You'll save a couple hundred bucks. Those are basically new machines that can't be sold as new because the box was opened. Don't get them from a third party. Don't go to Fry's to get refurbs. But if you go to Dell or Apple, the manufacturer, and you're getting a late model, full warranty, those can save you some money too. A refurb Mac Mini, $600. Problem with the Mac Mini is you still need to buy a monitor, so you're not done. It really does. It is a matter of taste, and that's why I'd like you to do some research. Go to the big box store. Spend some time with a PC and a laptop and a desktop. And look at it. See how well you can read it. You'd be missing out if you don't go to the Apple Store and try that too. I would do both. 8888 Ask Leo, and then you know how to get here, Jerry. And call me if you got a problem. I can help you out. We were talking about antiviruses, and I want to put in a plug for my favorite Nod 32. And we'll get back to the phones here. We got lots more calls to come. In fact, Gary in the Bay Area wants to talk about Apple 3G and bandwidth limits. But first, let's tell you how to protect your Mac with ESET Cybersecurity for the Mac. The world-famous lightweight computer protection I talk about all the time is now available on the Mac side using the same advanced heuristics engine with a very nice Mac-friendly interface. ESET Nod 32 on Windows, and now ESET Cybersecurity for the Mac, available at Apple stores nationwide as well as Micro Center and Fry's. It proactively detects bad things as they happen before they hit you. And what's more, ESET knows, as I have said so long, that education is the most important defense in fighting malicious software. That's why Cybersecurity for the Mac has a brand new educational component alongside the world-renowned protection. And, of course, because it's ESET, it's protection you won't even notice running. But don't take my word for it. Try it free for 30 days. Go to ESET.com/Mac and give it a free test drive. And don't forget to like ESET USA on Facebook, so you'll stay looped in on their contests, special offers, and exclusive content. ESET.com/Mac. If you use Windows or Macintosh, you need ESET. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Gary in the Bay Area. Hi, Gary.
Hey, how you doing, Leo? Great show.
Wonderful. Thank you. Appreciate your listening.
Yeah, my question to you is, on the Apple iPhones, there's a limitation of 20 megs to download on the 3G network.
Right.
Other than that, you got to go to Wi-Fi.
Right.
My buddies have the same phone, and they also have Droid phones. The Droid phones can download as much as they want, over 20 megs and all that upper. So is it Apple doing it, or is it the networks doing it? And the networks are doing it. I call the networks. They say Apple's doing it.
Well, we'll never know, will we? Because both of them deny it. I would guess it's AT&T saying that, but Apple puts it into the software. Apple may be doing it to protect you because, as we know, there are bandwidth limits for most accounts. You go through 3 or 5 gigabytes a month, and you're going to be paying extra. So, you know, I don't know who's doing it, and we may never know because neither side will admit it. But you're absolutely right, and there is an example of a difference between the iPhone and the Android phones. The iPhones tend to be a little more locked down.
Well, see, now I have a friend, though, that he has an Apple iPhone 4 on Verizon, which has no limit, and Verizon says, we don't limit nobody what they download.
Well, there you go.
And yet, they're still capped.
Well, the caps you're going to see. The caps are going to be the part of our life from now on. But that 20 megabyte limit, I don't know who does it. But it is absolutely there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Laporte here, the tech guy. Hour number three of the Tech Guy program. TechGuyLabs.com, that's the website. TechGuyLabs.com, you'll find a link there to the show notes, the audio, and our great chat room. We love our chat room. IRC.twit.tv. You can get there through the web, but if you have a chat client, we have instructions for that too. And let me just see, I always like to check how many people there are in the chat room right now. 778 of you. It's kind of like the kids in the back of the class, you know, those wiseacres who sit there mocking me, but they're also my brains. So when I can't remember something or need a little help, they often chime in, and very, very valuable. Lots of fun to hang out there, and our great chat mods make it a safe and easy and happy place to be. The happiest place on earth, including Dan, Can We Bowl Please, that's what CWBP stands for, Darth Emma, Hip, Houdini, Icon, Inferno, Kevin, Life, Sazoo, Marmot, Mick, Night Flyer, Sly Ferret, and Tech Zen. You know, I think I need a better handle. I just use Leo in there. I should be like a chipmunk or something. I should have a name. I should be an animal of some kind or something. Don't you think I need a name in there? Some of the people in the chat are my autonomic nervous system. Web4158 is saying, breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out. Will one of you take heartbeats as well? Thank you. Phone number is 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. Again, that's at the website too, techguylabs.com. You don't have to remember any of this. Michael, Louisiana, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Michael.
How are you doing? Thanks for
having me. I am well. Say again?
I said it's hot down here, but thanks for everything you do. Got a quick question for you. I just bought a new computer and gave someone a computer and put Norton antivirus on there. And on both computers, I'm getting my CPU usage is awful high. It's extremely high. So is it?
Well.
What I do? Help.
Yeah, Norton. First of all, okay, I have two things to say about that. For many years, Norton and McAfee were in a race as the number one and number two antivirus solution. They were really in a battle. And every year, PC Magazine and PC World and all the other computer magazines would review both, you know, the new versions, because they have to come out with a new one every year, right? And they'd put a chart in there that says features of Norton, features of McAfee, and they'd have check marks next. And if Norton missed a check mark that McAfee had, they lost sales. So it was an arms race between McAfee and Norton to add features. Well, what happens when you add features to a program? It gets bigger and bigger and bigger and fatter and fatter and fatter. It bloats up. And this is a classic bloatware problem. It happens to all software. And it really happened, I mean, big time with these two companies, to the point where both programs were essentially unusable. They did so much. They were so big. They just became hogs. And so I stopped recommending both of them. Now, I have to say, the folks from Symantec have reached out to me every year for the last 2 years saying, no, we fixed it. It's smaller. It's faster. Please don't hate us. And I'm sure that that's the case. You know, I recommend, we have an advertiser called Nod32, and one of the reasons I started using Nod32 is because it was, frankly, much, much, much lighter weight. Now, having said that, I do want to say this, Michael. I get this call also all the time for people who say, my CPU is at 100%, or Windows is using all the memory. What do I do? P- pay no attention. You were never supposed to look at those numbers. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Modern computer systems often will do things like that. They'll, you know, using all the memory is exactly what they're supposed to do. And then they free what they don't need when it's needed by other programs and so forth. But it speeds things up. CPUs frequently peg at 100%. It doesn't necessarily mean there's anything wrong or that something is unnecessarily utilizing resources. Computers are designed, operating systems are designed, frankly, to use all the resources they've got, but to be polite about it. And if somebody else is waiting in line, just like at the gym, when you're doing your bench press, if there's somebody else waiting in line, you maybe don't do that extra set. You let them get in there. Now, that's probably not a very apt analogy, but you get the idea. They're designed to do that. So I really wouldn't worry about your CPUs being pegged. If your system feels slow, that could be an issue. There could be other things going on. I don't think it's Norton these days, to be honest with you. I think both Norton and McAfee have realized that people were upset and have sped their systems up. One way to test this, of course, would be to turn them off. Both program, I don't mean uninstall it necessarily, but turn off the background processing, turn off the email scanners, things like that, so that it's not running in the background. And see if that helps your CPU. I bet it won't. I bet that's not why the CPU is going 100%. If your system feels slow, there are other reasons, other things that could be going on. The problem is that these systems are so darn complex nowadays, you can't really say point to one thing and say, that's it, that's doing it. For instance, one of the reasons systems get slow is that hard drive, if a hard drive is hard to read, if the data on the hard drive is starting to get a little bit flaky, that can really tie your system up as the hard drive tries to read and tries to read and tries to read. And that can slow your system down. Probably won't impact CPU cycles because it does that kind of without any thinking, but it can slow your system down. So all sorts of things could be going on. Maybe what you should do is get a program that says who's doing what. Microsoft has a great bunch of tools that Mark Rusinovich wrote. Mark was independent at sysinternals.com, sysinternals. And Microsoft bought the company. If you go to sysinternals.com now, you'll get taken to a Microsoft page. And Mark offers some really valuable information. Troubleshooting presentations, the sysinternal suite of tools, and more. And one of the things that is so great that Mark has is these process managing programs that tell you what's using all of that CPU. I'd say Process Explorer or Process Monitor, both of which are free from Microsoft. You run those, and it'll tell you what's going on and who's using all those CPU cycles. Why is your CPU getting pegged? Now, don't get too crazy with this stuff. Again, this is behind the curtain, and what happens is people start learning this stuff, and then they start going crazy, turning things off, and you might regret that. But Microsoft does offer these tools. If you go to sysinternals, sysinternals.com, take a look at the sysinternal suite of utilities. Mark wrote all of these things, and they're really, really useful for this kind of diagnosis. Process Monitor or Process Explorer is probably the one you're going to end up using, but you can see all of the, they have auto runs that allows you, that's a very useful tool that Mark wrote that allows you to see what starts up when your system starts up and disable some of those things. It's better than the startup monitor that Microsoft offers. But all of this is from Microsoft. He also has a great video, the case on here that I would highly recommend. The case of the, what is it, unexplained, what is it? I have to find the name of it. Of case of the unexplained. I guess that's it. he does one of these every year. It shows how to troubleshoot Windows. He just wrote a novel, too, Mark Rusinovich did. That's supposed to be incredible. Zero Day. People are raving about it. Really talented, smart guy. So don't freak out. It's not necessarily a problem that your system's at 100%. I hear that all the time. It's not necessarily your antivirus. But if it is, you'll find out if you run one of these tools. But I wouldn't worry. If your system doesn't feel slow, then continue on. 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Don't go outside. There's plenty of technology inside. You don't just draw the blinds, close the window. You don't want to see that. No fresh air. No, no, no. Let's geek out together. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. TechGuyLabs.com. That's the website. Well, I'm ready to take a little victory lap, wear a little bit of a laurel crown. I see the New York Times, the august New York Times says 3D starts to fizzle and Hollywood frets. I've been saying for a while, I don't like 3D. I certainly don't like it in the home, and I like it, you know, I don't like it in the movie theater. I went and see Thor in 3D, and I had to wear the glasses, and it was dark because of the, you know, 3D is half the brightness because the glasses were, I couldn't clean them. So they were like schmutzy. So I'm wearing these silly glasses on top of my regular glasses because I wear. So I got two pairs of glasses on for 2 hours in a theater where the movie's dark. And it was like, why? I don't want to do this. Thank you. Apparently, I'm not alone. The box office for the last couple of 3D blockbusters has been a little disappointed. The Pirates of the Caribbean, fewer than half of the tickets sold were 3D. Kung Fu Panda, 45% of the tickets sold were 3D. People are starting to turn away, maybe because it's more expensive, maybe because they don't like the stupid glasses, maybe because it doesn't work for them. IMAX president Greg Foster said audiences are very smart. He says the problem is these bad 3D movies. He said when they smell something aspiring to be more than it is, they catch on very quickly. So the big blockbusters like Avatar, you know, well, I guess they think they'll still sell 3D tickets. But now, interestingly, 3D screenings overseas, very, very strong. It's only here in North America that people don't like the 3D. And I suspect that comes from the fact that the 3D is a little newer in Europe. So Hollywood's starting to fret. They're starting to say, maybe 3D is not all it's not going to save the movie industry.
I don't know.
What do you think? I after seeing Thor in 3D, I thought, this is it. I'm done. I can't do this anymore. I'm not doing it ever again. 2D for me. Kevin Anaheim, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Kevin.
Yeah, hi, Leo. I was wondering, I was just out at a home show at Newport Beach, and the one that Scott Wilkerson was talking about.
Oh, you went to that. Good. How was that?
Pretty good. They had a lot of stuff out there. The only problem, it was kind of crowded. They're all in, like, the rooms of the hotel. So when you walk in, you're with, like, 10 other people jammed in the room with all.
Wow. Well, it was too popular. Scott shouldn't have mentioned it. That was the problem.
So I hate to see what it's like today or tomorrow.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, they had a lot of high-end audio systems in there, and I'm kind of looking for a mid-price range type of thing, and I was wondering what the best system out there would be for a home theater system.
So you already have the screen, or you're just looking at speakers, or what are you looking for?
I have that a large TV, and I'm just looking for a...
I see.
Type of thing.
Yeah, there's some very good. What you probably want if it's a mid-range system is something called a home theater in a box, or HTIB.
Okay.
And what these are is they come with all the speakers, the 5.1 or the 7.1 speakers. You get your subwoofer and your surround speakers and all of that. Mm-hmm. Generally, they'll come with an AV receiver that's designed to power all of those speakers. Sometimes they even come with a Blu-ray DVD that has the receiver built in. You have to choose. If you've already got a Blu-ray player, you don't need that.
Right. Now, is it better to just like buy the speakers and then buy an amp and stuff like that?
No. That's why I'm suggesting a home theater in the box. I mean, if you know what you're doing, you can. But often you want to get the speakers and the amp together. They need to be matched.
Okay. Are those
So HTIB is a good choice. The brand name that Scott and I both recommend frequently in the mid range is Onkyo, Onkyo.
Okay.
And they actually have an outlet store online, or you can go online and look at their systems. They've got 7-1 systems, 5-1 systems, and they're complete. So they come with both the speakers and an appropriate decoder, or you know, in the old days of stereos, we called these receivers.
Okay. I did see a system. I want to ask you, the Rogers Sounds Lab, but they had just the speakers, and then you had to buy the amp. How's that rated, or do you think that?
You know, I don't know. If you want to get reviews, ultimateavmag.com is Scott Wilkinson's
okay.
magazine, and they review all that stuff. I think he's said kind things about Rogers, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
I don't think you should get the speakers separately. I really think that you're better off in the mid price range, the sub $1,000 price range. You're better off getting the speakers and the receiver so that they're balanced. They go with each other, and in fact, even in the high end stuff, Scott has told me get stuff that works together. For instance, I was looking at Bowers and Wilkins speakers, very nice speakers. He said, get a Rotel receiver. They're owned by the same company. You're more likely to get something that works well together. HomeTheaterMag.com is another good site. HomeTheaterMag.com, Scott writes for them as well. And they're a little bit more consumer-oriented. Ultimate is Ultimate. UltimateAVMag.com or HomeTheaterMag.com. Same parent company, and Scott writes for both of them. And they both have reviews of stuff. I'm not an expert on this. It's hard to be an expert. You have to do what Scott does, which is have a home theater testing lab so you can listen to it all. Let's see. He likes the Polk Blackstone speakers, best budget speakers. They have all of this stuff. This is a good site. HomeTheaterMag.com. That's probably where I'd go. And you're actually, obviously you care a lot. You went to that show. That's a great way to do some research. The problem is all these guys, it all sounds good, then they all sell you and they say, oh, our speakers are the best. That's why the reviews are nice. Jay in Woodland Hills. Thanks for hanging on. Jay, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. I've written a couple of books on and teach Logic Pro, which I know you say your son is using.
He uses Logic Express, very similar, but he loves it.
Yeah, it's a great program. So anyway, I want to do what I'm calling my Logic Pro 9 boot camp. And I've been looking at ways to do it so that people, let's say 6 to 8 people can see my screen.
Oh, this is great. Can I sign my son up for this?
Absolutely.
I would love this. He's been looking. We've been looking for a summer camp. You know, there's lots of music camps, but there aren't that many music camps that teach electronic music production, which was what you do with Logic.
Right, exactly. Well, I do teach it for songwriters at the Songwriting School of Los Angeles, Burbank.
I love this idea. So now, I think what you'd want to use is show Logic, and you want to have your students seeing Logic. Skype is not going to be a good choice for that. You're going to probably want to use a desktop sharing program. GoToWebinar is designed to do online seminars. In fact, I'm doing a GoToWebinar on Thursday, as a matter of fact, on the future of work. And so the idea would be there that you would share your screen. You could actually have hundreds of people, but it sounds like a smaller class would be better for you. You could share your screen with your students. They can chat with you. They can talk with you. They can share their screen back. I think it'd be a better choice. Let me talk more about that when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Ever ends.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet at an amazing price. Call 866 the number 2 get net to get DSL Extreme. Jay wants to give an online kind of educational seminar on using a program called Logic Pro, which is a really great program for making electronic music on, is it Mac or PC, or is it just Macs?
Just Mac.
Yeah. My son loves Logic Pro.
Well, it's absolutely the Swiss Army knife of what we
call
AWs, digital audio workstations.
Now, are you do you do this for a living? What do you, is this your business?
It's one of my, I'm a composer. I did the TV series Zorro in the 90s.
Oh, that's neat.
And I also do this. I've written two books on it, one called Going Pro with Logic Pro 9. But I also do private consulting, and I've got so many emails from people saying, I'd love to do this, but I can't come to L.A. Why don't you do it online?
Right. Leo, I love the idea, and I'd love to get this is exactly what I've been looking for my son. Well, first of all, I want to get your book. Now, does it matter that he's using Logic Express? Can he use this?
He could. It's, you know, it's probably 85% the same. Mostly Logic Pro comes with more content. But it's worked the same way.
Dad was very cheap. I just bought him the Logic Express, not Logic Pro.
Right. By the way, do you know about Justin TV? Somebody.
I do. We actually stream on Justin TV. So if you want to do a pure one-way broadcast, Ustream.tv or Justin.tv are excellent ways to, you put a camera on yourself and you give the seminar. Then it's more of a lecture. You do have a chat room on the side. It's more of a lecture, but you could absolutely do that. It depends on how interactive you want to be. I mean,
you need to be able to hear their questions and answer them.
Yeah. You want to hear them speaking to you?
Right. I don't need necessarily for them to see their screens, but I do want to be able to hear them and respond to them.
Our advertiser, Citrix, has a program called Go to Training that allows you to, it's designed for corporations to do online training, but it would work perfectly well for this. And this is nice because you can have quizzes, you can have, you know, a lot of interactivity with your students, and you can save your course and they can watch it later without you being around.
Oh, very good.
So yes, you could use Justin.tv and you kind of cobble something together on your own, but there are solutions that are designed specifically for this kind of thing. Chatroom's also telling me about something called Vocal, V-O-K-L-E, and this is a somewhat similar idea where you host your own talk show online. There's a lot of solutions.
Sorry.
In this,
yeah,
I think you could totally do this. How can we find out when you're doing it? I want to know.
Well, you can either email me at jay@jayasher.com, jay@jayasher.com, or do it through my website, jayasher.com.
Excellent. Good. Henry's going to be thrilled to hear about this.
People that he probably knows, like Alex Van Halen and people like that.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Yep.
That's awesome. So, of course, the world has changed a little bit since you did Zorro. I mean, now you could do everything. You can fully orchestrate this all on your computer, can't you?
Yeah, but the funny thing is when I did that TV series, I did it in Logic's grandfather, an Atari program called Notator.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
I did it with samplers, and then I sweetened it with a 22-piece orchestra, and that's how I did it.
Sweet. That's a nice way to sweeten.
Yeah,
well,
it was.
I think this is so exciting. I think it's a really, you know, what's amazing is that somebody like my son, a 16-year-old kid, can, on a personal computer with a Logic Express is a couple hundred bucks piece of software, can write massive, elaborate songs and really enjoy himself. He just loves it.
That's great. And there's so many libraries that you can get for it that can take it to the next level that I'll be going into.
I think there are a number of ways to do this. I think GoTo Training is a good choice. You'll have to pay some money to use it. There are free choices, Vocal or Ustream.tv or Justin.tv. But there are lots of ways to do this. It really, what it depends upon is how much support for things like tests and interactivity that you want. You know, Go to Training is designed around training. But I think this vocal is new to me, and it looks very interesting. It does allow you to take audience questions. This looks really interesting. What I would do is go to these sites like Ustream.tv, Justin.tv, VOKLE.com, and watch a live event and see how it works for those people. It'll give you a very, very good idea. This I'm going to find out more about this vocal. This looks really great, and I thank the chat room for telling me about this. It looks very, very interesting. And it looks like people are doing exactly those kinds of things, Jay. We live in an interesting time, I have to say, and a great time for learners. If you are interested in learning something, boy, with iTunes University, universities online, putting their lectures online and things like vocal, it's just the sky's the limit. Really exciting. I mentioned that I'm sorry, I don't have a, I'm not good at plugging. Thursday, I'm doing a webinar on the future of work. I'm doing it with the Citrix folks using their GoToWebinar software. They wanted me to talk a little bit about, I have a presentation I do on how work is changing. And I'd love to give you a link to it, but I just don't have one. You'd think I would, but I don't. So I guess watch the show notes. If I can get a link, I'll let you know about it. Maybe somebody in the chat room could find it. I'm just not very good at... is that it? Really? GoToAssist.com/economy? Is that it? I'm not very good at plugging. It is. All right. Let me check that out before I... Oh, I did mention it already, didn't I? Before I mentioned it on the air. Let's see if this is it. GoToAssist.com/economy. It is. That's thank you. I'm glad you knew. So there is limited space available for that. But since this is the first time I've mentioned it, since I'm so bad at plugging, you can find out about it by going to GoToAssist.com/economy. We'll be doing this Tuesday, not Thursday. That's wrong. It's Thursday. I hope it's not Tuesday. Maybe that's why they didn't give me a link. I'm not available Thursday at 10 a.m. Tuesday at 10 a.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. I believe it's Thursday. Maybe that's why we don't have a link. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Autumn is on the line. Autumn, welcome. Leo Laporte, how can I help you today?
Oh, boy. First of all, let me say that I'm on the trailing edge of technology.
Good place to be. You don't want to be on the leading edge. That's where all the collisions occur.
And I have a 13-year-old PC. That is wheezing and in terrible trouble. I think it's infected with everything.
Oh, dear.
And it's very slow, so I can't look at things people send me from YouTube and stuff because it, you know, it's too slow. So I regretfully feel I have to get another machine, another computer. I have fine screen, fine keyboard. But what I want to know is, if I go to Windows 7... and I want to bring things forward infected. A, can I clean them up first? And B, what do I have to do? Because I understand it's not backward compatible.
No, that's not true. Windows 7 is absolutely backward compatible.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Hang on the line. I'll tell you, this is a good question. How do I get to a new computer without bringing all the bad stuff with me? We'll talk about it in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Laporte, the tech guy. We've been talking to Autumn, who has a 13-year-old computer that's just messed up. And Autumn, I presume that what you want to bring with you is your data, right? I mean, or is it programs too? Autumn, are you there? I guess not. So the deal is that one of the things Microsoft works very hard on is to make sure that new versions of Windows still work with old software. In most cases, you're not going to have a problem. When you buy that new Windows 7 computer, get the 32-bit version. You might have to tussle a little bit to do that, however, because Microsoft wants to move everybody to 64-bit. That could cause a compatibility issue with some older hardware and software. But 32-bit version of Windows 7 is pretty compatible. Some really old software, you might have to run in compatibility mode and so forth, but they have ways to do that. Well, in general, though, I would bet that there's only one or two programs that you need to bring along with you. Remember, you'll get new email programs. You'll get a new internet browser. A lot of the software that you'll use when you go to Windows 7 comes with Windows 7. So if there's a particular program you want to use, I would check and just look on the website of that program, see if they have an updated version or if that the old version works with Windows 7. It's going to be a big improvement.
Well, tell me.
If you can't watch the YouTube videos on them, you really do need to update. And I think Windows 7 is a lot better, to be honest. All right, we're going to come back in just a bit. Dick DeBartolo is here with his gadget of the week, our Giz Whiz, and maybe I'll have time for a couple more calls before we do that, though I do want to tell you to back up. This would help Autumn a little bit. One of the ways to move to a new computer is to sign up for Carbonite.com. Back up all your data. If you've actually been a Carbonite customer all along, this is really easy. Get the new computer. All you have to do is log on to your Carbonite account and restore, and all that stuff that's backed up goes right on the new computer, ready to go. Carbonite is online storage. It's a backup. It's both. Because, you know, you go to Carbonite.com, use my name Leo right now. You could try it free for 15 days, Mac or Windows. It'll start backing up. Now, everything that's backed up, you can see not only on any computer, Mac or PC, but you can also see it on your iPhone, your BlackBerry, your Android phone. I mean, this is really great. And I have to say, I'm so proud of Carbonite because they just moved their support service center to Lewiston, Maine. It was overseas. It was in India, I think. They've moved it to Lewiston, Maine because they know you're getting better support that way. They've just hired 250 people there. They're going to be very well trained. It's just great. I'm really pleased. What a great company, a great product. Thanks to David Friend, who's the CEO over there, for doing the right thing. And if you're looking for great backup, Carbonite.com. Try it free for 2 weeks at Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Leo if you decide to buy. And I do want you to try before you buy. But if you decide to buy, use my name Leo again. You'll get 2 additional months on the 12-month subscription. Just $59 a year. It's a great deal. Carbonite. You got to back it up to get it back. So do it right with Carbonite. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I take you to Gizneyland, home of the Gizwiz himself, Dick DeBartolo. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how you doing, pal?
Very well. Mad Magazine's maddest writer and our gadget expert.
I am both of those.
Both of them. Both of them. And many people don't know this, but an avid boater and writer for boating magazines.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm here today with my gadget is the new Droid X2.
Oh, man. So jealous.
Come on. It's been out for a week and you don't have one.
I had a Droid X and I loved it. Now, I haven't seen the X2. Tell me all about it.
Oh, okay. So the X2, if you look at them side by side, you'll never tell the difference. Once you know, the X2 is a little bit darker. The X2 has a new Gorilla Glass screen, so much less reflective. But the two big changes, the X2 has the NVIDIA dual core,
wow,
1 gigabyte processor, and it has new resolution. Now the piece of junk that you own now.
Yeah. The old 4.3 inch screen. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, screens are the same, but, resolution on yours is, 480 by 554. And the new phone is 540 by 690.
Wow.
Resolution's up by 26%. Pretty much, Leo, everything else is the same. It uses the same camera, the same 720p HD video, mini HD MI out. And one strange thing is they've taken the dedicated camera button away. So now the camera is menu driven.
Now this is Verizon only.
Verizon, yes. I believe it was May 26th that it arrived in the stores. I only got mine yesterday, so I really haven't gotten to play with it, but I do love the resolution of the screen.
What have you been using wrong before? What have you been using right before? what? You're not an iPhone guy. I know that much.
No, I'm not. You know what? The reason I want to have a Droid device is exactly the same reason you have everything. My iPod Touch is great. So when people says, hey, here's a great iPhone app, almost 90% of them work on the iPod Touch.
Right.
So I also wanted to have a Droid device, and I was using the Droid X. And quite frankly, it was on a loan. And they said, could you send that back? And I said, I test apps
I
on
like it.
And they said, okay. Well, you know what? We'll lend you an X2 for a while.
Oh, good.
So
$200 if you're signing up for a new 2-year Verizon account.
Or you're re-upping your old plan, because that's what they did.
Otherwise, I'm sure these are fairly expensive. But I really liked my old Droid X. It sounds like a nice improvement.
Yeah. Yeah. What are you using now, then? You said your old Droid X.
I lent my Droid X to Lisa because she was interested in getting a new phone, and she left it in a cab in New York City. By the way, I understand there's quite
a... that's why you have to sell bricks. You leave stuff on planes, trains.
Not me. She did.
No, I have a boat. He never left anything on a boat.
No, I know. I should. I start leaving things on your boat.
Yeah.
Well, the funny thing is, I just heard that in New York City, there's a brisk business. New York City cabbies... you'll never get your phone back because the cabbies, they drive up to a place where they give the phone to somebody, and the people don't want the phone to resell the phone. They want the phone for the personal information on the phone. So what the guys who pay, they'll give you $100 or whatever it is. They give you even more if the cabbie is smart enough to take, as soon as he finds a phone, take the battery out right away so that the phone can't be wiped. And then the bad guys, they get the phone and they get all your personal information on it. So... I guess somebody has all my personal information because that Droid X was left in a cab in New York City.
Are you interested in buying it? Because I have a friend.
I'd like to buy my information back, please.
I can arrange that.
That's why it's good to put that auto wipe thing on there where you can wipe your phone data. But of course, that's why they pop the battery right away. So, Dick, thank you. We stick around. We're going to do the weekly Giz Whiz in just a minute or two.
I'll be here.
All right. Meanwhile, let's continue on with the Tech Guy Show. I think we have time for one or two more calls, starting with Diana, who's been holding on for a long time in Burbank. Hi, Diana. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Hey, Leo. I recently purchased a Gateway notebook from a friend who was upgrading. $50.
Yeah, probably worth every penny, too.
It's flipping brilliant. It's wonderful. It's got like 100 gig hard drive and 15.4-inch widescreen. I'm loving it. Now, my question is, I live in Burbank, but I don't live in downtown Burbank. And downtown Burbank has declared itself a Wi-Fi hotspot. So I was wondering
nice.
If there was something hopefully not too cheap and pretty easy that I could boost my Wi-Fi reception.
Well, how far are you away from a place where you can get Wi-Fi reception in Burbank?
Maybe 3/4 mile.
No, you can't do it.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah, Wi-Fi really only goes about 150 feet.
Feet?
Yeah. Wi-Fi is not notoriously long distance. Now, they do make special antennas that are directional that you could aim exactly at the Wi-Fi hotspot downtown and maybe get it, but it's expensive. It's not worth it, not for a $100 laptop. So what you're probably going to end up doing is getting internet access. You could either get it in your house, or you could go out and buy a MiFi, which is a credit card-sized device. All the cell phone companies sell them, Verizon, Sprint, AT&T. And it's a Wi-Fi access spot that uses the cell phone data. And then that way you can wherever you go with this new Gateway laptop, you'll have a Wi-Fi access spot in your pocket.
Okay, never heard of that before. I will check that out.
Yeah, probably the least expensive one is from Virgin Mobile.
All righty.
I think, what does Virgin Mobile cost? $30 or $40 a month? I mean, that's the cheapest. The AT&T, Verizon, Sprint ones are $60 a month.
Okay, doke.
And that's probably a good way to have kind of portable internet access wherever you go. Of course, when you're downtown, you can use the Burbank Municipal Wi-Fi. But yeah, there's no good, easy way to get Wi-Fi from that great a distance, I'm afraid. Hey, I'm out of time. Thank you so much for the call, Diana. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you go to the website techguylabs.com for our schedule, more information, all our stations, and show notes, too. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week.